And now how politicians work to pass themselves off as regular people. It's an art that's been around for decades, and it's a big issue in this year's presidential race as both Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are being scrutinized by voters who want to know if they can relate to these guys. And don't kid yourselves, folks. Most everybody engages in passing, whether it's dyeing your hair or wearing fancy clothes to create a certain impression or all the stuff we do to impress in the dating world. We're joined now by Professor Marcia Dawkins. She teaches at Brown University and is author of Clearly Invisible, Racial Passing and the Color of Cultural Identity. Professor, so good to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
You know, is it safe to say, Marcia, that almost everybody passes to one extent or another?
Well, I'm not sure if it's safe to say it, depending on some of the stories that I've looked at, but I definitely think it's a truth. For some people, passing actually can be a matter of life and death.
What do you mean, life and death?
Well, it depends on the situation. One of the cases that I cover in my book is the story of Ellen and William Craft, who are a couple who were enslaved and who passed. Ellen passed as a white, disabled gentleman, a wealthy slave owner, and William passed as her slave. And they got on the train in Atlanta and boarded it all the way to Philadelphia, where they were able to escape into free territory. So for them and for many others, passing can be a matter of survival, life and death.
Well, where did this verb come from, this notion of the word passing? Where did it originate?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Most people don't know this. This, too, comes out of the American tradition and sad history of enslavement. So what would happen is if you were enslaved, you needed a pass in order to get off of the plantation for a particular errand or a free day or whatever the case was. And so this would have to be signed by various people on staff at the plantation. And so if an enslaved person had this, they could go. But when they didn't have it, sometimes if they had the right look, if they had the right shade of skin, if they were dressed a particular way, they could still get off the plantation. And so that's where the verb comes from. Pass.
So what is passing exactly, at least in the way that you're using it today?
Sure. I use it in two related ways. The first is this kind of way that we've been talking about, presenting yourself as other in order to succeed, survive, find love, do harm, spark social protest, this kind of thing. And also, I develop a secondary definition in the book, which is this idea, particularly for people of multiracial backgrounds, like this enslaved couple that I just talked about, where passing is really representing a part of your identity rather than the whole.
Is passing the same thing as lying?
I think it can be, and it all depends on who you talk to. That was the amazing thing I found as a result of doing this research, that for the passer, it may not necessarily be a lie. The passer could be presenting the truth of who they are or who they want to be in a society that won't allow them to do so otherwise. But perhaps to you or me, we could say, hey, wait a minute. You're not presenting me with the truth of who you are or into the station of life in which you were born. So I think it really depends on the eyes through which we're looking.
So it can be lying, obviously.
I think depending on your perspective, it can be.
And you say on your website that you, too, are a passer, Marcia. Tell me it's not true.
I'm sad to say I'm a passer as well. But in some respects, I'm also not so sad to say it, because it really gave me a firsthand account of what the people in my book and what their stories were all about and what the meanings were. But to answer your question, yes, I'm a passer. And
you're an age passer specifically, right?
I realize my first contact with passing came at a very young age. I'm from New York City, and my parents were school teachers. And because they worked all day, they needed to put me in a kindergarten that would be an all day. And so that was in a different neighborhood. So not only did I have to present myself as older, because I wasn't 5 years old yet, but also as from a different neighborhood. And I was mildly aware of this, not so much the geographical issue, but the age issue, because I really was smaller than the kids. There were things that I couldn't do, like hold my pen or pencil a certain way, motor skills I didn't have. And it was very imperative that I would work on these things at home with my parents, as opposed to just saying, hey, I can't do it. I'm not old enough.
Yeah. Well, I'm a pastor, too, I got to tell you.
Okay.
I have two boys. They're now 17 and 14, but when they were younger and an event like the Olympic Games would come along, I would always tell their friends that I'd won a bunch of gold medals, and for a long time they would agree with me. They would sort of, oh, really? They'd be astonished by that, and it was kind of fun for a while. So I passed myself off as an Olympic. I'm an Olympic passer, I guess.
Okay.
So why is this all so common, Marcia? What do you make of it?
Sadly, it's become, I think, part of the human experience, because we have, for better and for worse, depending on the situation, you know, all of these rules about who people can be and what they can and cannot do, what is appropriate and inappropriate. And sometimes those are just things, and sometimes those are unjust, as in the case that we talked about a few minutes ago in terms of enslavement.
Yeah.
And people had to defy those categories in order to make a change.
You know, I'm wondering what the fact that this is so common, what it says about who we are as Americans, as people of the world, because it is so common.
I think it says a lot of things. One of them is that perhaps we as Americans are passers in general, that we live in a nation that tells us we're free, that tells us we're equal, that tells us we have the rights to do things, yet we don't get to live out those statements, those declarations. And so we engage in these kind of acts of passing that you and I are talking about in order to access those bigger rights.
You know, in thinking about your book, you know, you couldn't help but wonder what it would be like to live in a world without passing, without anybody putting on airs of any kind. I mean, what an incredibly different planet that would be in a situation like that.
Absolutely. And it's something that really occurred to me, especially as I was winding down with the book. Even as I went into it, I thought, well, this is really something that I'm looking at as a historical phenomenon, but I'm really not going to find it now. And, you know, perhaps we really have evolved beyond it. And, you know, more and more stories I found sadly reported the opposite. But I, too, am left imagining that that world perhaps that John Lennon described so many
decades
ago.
Isn't that the truth? On your website, clearlyinvisible.com, you've trotted out your own top 10 passing list. Tick off some of those for us so people can wrap their arms around this idea a little bit more.
Absolutely. I had a little fun with this, and I was watching David Letterman, so I call it, you know, Dr. Dawkins' daytime top 10 lists of passing, right? But we've talked about some of the obvious ones, race, class, gender and sexuality. But then there are some that are less obvious that I think also have a lot to do with our election season as well, like religion, health, ability, disability, alternate reality, these personas that we create online. We've also talked about age. Of course, citizenship status would be another one. And I think if I had to add a number 11 to that list just for the sake of conversation, I would say political correctness, anti-racist political correctness, if we're going to keep it to a racial discussion.
And why do you call that passing? Why does that fit that category?
Because I think a lot of times political correctness allows us to say things in a very veiled way that disguise larger truths about who we are and what we believe. Perhaps we know, saying things that don't necessarily jive with all human beings are created equal or all men are created equal, as is written, in our founding documents, aren't really right, but still we might believe them anyway. So we can say them in particular ways that make us seem correct.
Marcia Dawkins is our guest. Her new book is titled Clearly Invisible, Racial Passing in the Color of Cultural Identity. I mean, do you think changing or emphasizing something about yourself to either fit in or stand out is okay, or is it not? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You know, Marcia, what is the most common type of passing in your view? The one that people do the most.
Yeah, I think in our present society, it would probably be a tie for age and this kind of alternate reality online type of passing that, we create these personas that really put our best foot forward, that make a situation in which we can't make any kind of mistake to the last segment that you had on just this very episode of your show.
Yeah.
And so, we're crafting these all too perfect personas.
Now, why are we doing that? I mean, what's that about?
Well, I think part of it is cultural, right? I think we've always been taught to put our best feet forward, excuse my grammar there. but in addition to that, I really think because we understand how scrutinized, the virtual reality that we live in is, that we really don't want to put anything out there that could in any way come back to bite us later on.
You're right, because on Facebook, people always put out these really, they tend to anyway, they put out these really glorified images of themselves, how great the family is, how successful they are at the job, the fun, incredible thing they just did over the weekend that the rest of you did not do. There really is that sense that we're doing great, and maybe you are too, or maybe not.
Absolutely. And I can just recall a personal experience I had when my grandmother passed away a couple of years ago. And, you know, here I am. I'm a happy Facebook poster. I'm happy to tell you that things are going well at work or with my book, yeah, or that you and I are having a great conversation today. Yet I was really reluctant to say, you know, I'm having a hard time, you know, X number of Facebook friends because my grandmother just died. It was just something I didn't want to put out there.
Mm-hmm. Because it's sad and it takes away from the image, right?
I think so. I think it all, and this goes back to the discussion of passing, right? I think it depends on what the goal is. And for so many of us, the goal online is really not just to survive and stand out, but to succeed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what is the best way one chooses to do that?
You said the other most common type of passing was age and how people, you're saying they work to disguise exactly how old they are, right?
I think a lot of times we do, and you know, this goes hand in hand with technology, just to be clear. So when you think of things like Photoshop, when we think of things like plastic surgery, and how we're going to these interesting lengths to change our reality. And you know, why is that? For many of us, it's so we can succeed, because there is age discrimination in our society. For others of us, it's, you know, to get access to particular things that we might not be able to get access to otherwise. So I do think that age is pretty prevalent. In fact, whenever I talk to people, we can have these conversations about sexual orientation and religion and race and all of these different hot button issues. But at the end of the day, someone will always pull me to the side and say, you know, Marcia, actually, I'm an age passer too.
Well, that's our question on the table today as we talk about passing. Do you think changing or emphasizing something about yourself to either fit in or stand out is okay? What do you pass off most often about yourself? 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Bill from Kansas City, Missouri, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, and you've already stole some of my thunder.
I hope not too much, Bill.
No, that's all right. I'm not in this for grandiose. And she expressed some of the idea of this ageism thing. When she was first talking about being a passer, my image jumped to my mind was the old laugh-in skit with Artie Johnson, the old man on the bench,
yeah,
with the derby.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, people that of age are not to express interest, physical interest in other people. and that whole shtick about having, if somebody, and I will speak from the male perspective, of expressing interest in a younger female, all of a sudden you're a dirty old man.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do about that? Do you pretend not to show any interest in the human race at all? And to me, I think maybe Facebook, and I will then get off and allow her, because she's an expert at this, that we have for a long time been passers. And Facebook has accelerated or brought more of that to a greater conscience to everybody, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, Bill, wasn't it Ruth Busby who was the one sitting there that Artie Johnson would,
yes,
hit on? Yeah, I remember,
yes,
that from
Ruth
those
Busby
days.
And she was always was open to the advances, but then would always rebuff them in a rather extravagant way. But then you also have the other woman, you always have those women who are that way, and you have the cougar image also,
yeah,
going the other way. And it just, I can see that this has been going on for a long time. It's a very interesting subject, though. I'll get off the phone.
Yeah, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, he was asking Marcia about Facebook and how, to what extent Facebook has accelerated this whole art of passing in our society.
I really like Bill's choice of words there. That's only partly because I'm a rhetoric geek, right? But I do like this term accelerated because I think he's right. This is something, a practice we've been engaged in since people from different walks of life have confronted each other over the course of human history. But because we can now share those things so instantaneously and in such a larger quantity, I do think that social media has in some ways accelerated the process on the one hand. On the other hand, it's also accelerated the means by which we can find out if other people are passing. And so it becomes tricky. You know, there's two sides to that coin as well.
Well, this hour we're visiting with Marcia Dawkins. She teaches at Brown University. She's the author of Clearly Invisible, Racial Passing and the Color of Cultural Identity. It's all about this idea of passing ourselves off as somebody we are not. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. How do you pass yourself off sometimes? Again, 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Let's go to Martin from Kansas City, Missouri, who's been holding on for a bit. Martin, good morning.
Good morning. Very interesting subject.
Good. Thanks.
It's nice that you're bringing this up. I always lived in the sense that I was just trying to survive. I came from a family. We moved every year in the mid-70s and 80s, or let's say early 80s. And we had came from Norway to America, and we had to change everything that we did, everything that we had. Then we moved down to San Angelo, Texas, which is a border town. We had to change there, and our accents changed. We moved to Oklahoma City, and once again, we had to change. We moved every year, and if we didn't change what we were wearing or our accents, we were a target for the bullies.
Mm.
And it wasn't until I hit my 40s that I realized I was living my life this way, never really knowing who I was because we were constantly being forced to pass, you would say, but growing up, it was more of a survival act than it was passing.
Boy, that's a great set of comments, Martin. What do you think, Marcia?
Well, I thank you for sharing that with us, Martin, and I think you're one of many people who's told me this kind of stories, and I thank you for that because you're defying a lot of stereotypes we have about passing. One is that if you're just doing it for survival, it isn't passing, right? Sometimes passing is survival, as you've talked about, as we talked about with the example during enslavement. But also that it's still happening and that people of various racial backgrounds, you know, we usually think this is something that people of color or people who are multiracial are doing. But to hear, you know, that this is a story of immigrants and immigration as well is also a really critical piece to this conversation that doesn't get a lot of airtime. So I thank you for sharing it as well.
Well, I have one question. When we came here from Norway in the early 70s, our accent caused us a lot of trouble because of the tolerance back then. And our house was being painted with swastikas. We were being called Nazis and beat up. I'm about 6 foot blonde hair, blue eyed, and that has always been a problem. Even the language, you know, back in those days, the tolerance was not what it is today. And it's really sad that it's still happening. But I am noticing my own children and the youth today not wearing the exact same clothes, not doing the same thing. There's more variety in these different groups of who am I and who are you, and there's more tolerance with each other. That's what I'm seeing.
I see the same thing, Martin, in my own kids. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much. What a great program.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Martin.
Every day.
I appreciate it, Martin. You bet. Bye-bye. Oh. Let's go to Gene from Fairway. Gene, you're on UpToDate. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This observation is a bit obscure, but I think your guest will understand. I noticed there is some instance of this, and I just wanted to know if your guest feels that it's a greater instance than I noticed. When President Obama was elected, and just because of prejudice and bigotry is no longer politically correct, great many people were, oh, I'm so glad, you know, we finally brought a milestone here, a black man as president. And many of these people, I'm sure, really didn't feel that way at all. They felt, oh, he's not up to the job, you know, they can't do it. We've never had a minority as president before, but they had to pass this idea off that they were all for it. And I just wondered if your guest thought that this was a very prevalent attitude, because I've noticed some instances, but I didn't know how widespread it was.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You bet. Marcia?
Thank you again for that question as well. I did see some of this, particularly around the time Obama was elected a few years ago. You'd have commentators saying things like, wow, that speech was so great. I forgot he was black. Or, you know, he got elected because he was the right kind of black guy. And at the same time, you'd have other people saying, well, he got elected because he's actually not black. His mom is white and from Kansas, and his father, because he's not African-American per se, you know, doesn't give him that kind of credibility or pedigree in terms of U.S. national identity, right? And I think we see these things coming to fore even now. One of the main things that I'm beginning to notice in 2012 with this election is really how very masterfully sometimes and sometimes very awkwardly, right, Obama's opposition will make the case that his identity is questionable and we should really question whether he is one of us and whether he belongs, not just as president, but even as an American. So I think your guest is onto something there, yes.
Well, I think voters have the same question about Mitt Romney sometimes, and they wonder whether he's really one of us or is he above us somehow because he's so wealthy and has been so successful. I mean, how do you gauge these guys when it comes to both of their skills at passing?
Well, this is what first of all, let me say I'm delighted you've asked the question. And this is what I call, I think 2012 will be the battle of the passers, the election of the passers. And so, you know, on the one hand, we have Obama, who is said to be passing in all of these ways, as well in terms of education and all this stuff. And then we have Romney, who I find absolutely amazingly fascinating in this regard. So here we have Romney, not just in terms of class, trying to present himself as not part of the 1% many times, but also, you know, many reports have said, you know, it's hard to even determine what his actual home state is. Is it Massachusetts? Is it Michigan? Is it New Hampshire or Utah, right? It's hard to determine what he really believes just looking on his nonverbal gestures when he's giving speeches. He turns in such a way, and his nonverbal cues have been read by many experts as kind of maybe a flag that something else might be going on beneath the surface. Then you get his etch-a-sketch, you know, what some have called his ideological flip-flopping, right? And so I don't know if you or any of your listeners have seen it, but there's this great video on YouTube by Hugh Atkins called Will the Real Mitt Romney Please Stand Up? And, of course, it's to my favorite passer's great song, Eminem, right? So, you know, so you've got all these things, and then, you know, you've got underneath all of that, you've got these questions about, you know, religion and what does Romney really believe and his ethnic background. I mean, what is this whole Mexican connection?
Yes.
Did his ancestors cross back legally? And if so, what does that mean for self-deportation strategies today? So it's this amazing moment that I think we're having, and where I think Romney and Obama are really different, if we're going to come at them just from a passing standpoint today, is that Obama, we can look at Obama as someone who people are trying to accuse of passing, who doesn't let us know whether they're necessarily right or not, right, other than obviously with his birth certificate and these kind of things. And then we have Romney on the other side, who's actually giving us this backstage pass into the mind and life of a pastor, where you don't know whatever move you're going to make. Is this going to be the end of whatever objective it is you're trying to reach? And so some days it works, some days it doesn't. You have to, you know, come back the next day and try to figure out a different way to go. Does it now change depending on who you ally yourself with, like Paul Ryan, right? So, you know, Romney is just fascinating in this regard. And because of media, I think it's happening oh so publicly.
So Romney is trying to be not a member of the 1%, and Obama is trying to be what, Marcia?
Well, I think, again, it depends on who you talk to. I would say he's just trying to be president. And that's precisely what everybody's questioning, right? If you're not American, if you're not really African-American, if you're not really white enough either, can you be president? And I think that's the undertow of a lot of the criticism that he gets as well.
You know, how about the first ladies? Because it seems to me that the Romney camp is using Ann Romney to make her husband seem more personable. And maybe some of that's true with Michelle Obama as well.
Definitely. I see this in relation to both first ladies. And we see how they get played in the domestic sphere to various degrees. And so with Michelle Obama, for instance, you know, she has this very strong background in her professional career and has morphed, you know, into this amazingly domesticated first lady. And we can remember a lot of the critiques that she suffered during her husband's first election campaign, as well as perhaps part of this rebranding strategy. And the same can be said for Romney's wife, that she is now out to make him look more personable as well, that when we can't figure out exactly who these passers are, often the burden of proof is on those who are closest to them.
Yeah. If our listeners want to chime in on how they think Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are passing themselves off as and what they're trying to achieve through that, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, up to date at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Sue from Kansas City, Missouri, thanks for holding on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have an interesting story about age passing.
Yeah.
At 55, I changed jobs to a high-tech company,
mm-hmm.
and nothing on the application indicated, they didn't ask for anything that indicated my age, so that was great, because I was a little concerned about it. Got hired the first day in my boss's office. She said to me, use your looks to your advantage. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what is she suggesting here? And I kind of just sat there, didn't say a word, and looked at her. And then she said, you don't look your age. And what she was telling me, which I took to heart, was practically everybody else in the company was under 30. They didn't need to know that I was 55 and could be their grandmother.
That's neat.
And I wasn't doing anything other than dye in the gray. I wasn't doing anything to try to pass. It's just the way, you know, I was hired without any indication of age. So it was an interesting experience.
How did your experience at that company work out?
Just fine. I just ignored the fact that I could have been their grandma.
Well, good for you, Sue. Good for you. Great story. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye. Let's go to Diane from Liberty. Diane, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
And it's erupted recently. I work with senior citizens, and within this demographic, and this is really the heart of my question, is do people pass in a certain demographic as far as age or who they're speaking with and where they live, because we live in the Midwest. When I go speak to our clients, I practice Buddhism, and I take all of my beads off and kind of let them assume that I'm Christian. And nod when they say some Christian terminology, and I don't know if I would have the same proclivities to do so if I lived on the coast or if I was speaking to a younger demographic. So I'll get off the air to listen to that.
Well, Diane, before you go, you do that. Why? Explain yourself just a little bit more.
Well, I go in, and it may just be that I perceive it that a disproportionate amount of my clients are Christian. I would say probably up, or at least espouse it, probably 85% to 90%. Because I deal with people 80 and above. And many times they will say, I'm married to a Christian, and they will say, I chose you because I know your husband is a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, and maybe wrongfully so, or maybe I'm putting too much importance on it, but I almost feel like I will not get their business if they knew I was a Buddhist.
Yeah, yeah. Diane, I'm glad you called in. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You know, Marcia, I'm guessing that religion would be one of the most common areas where people try to feign one thing or another. They're more religious than they really are. They're less religious. They might hide the fact they're a Buddhist in some circumstances. Interesting.
Absolutely. And this is another area that is really popping up in the research now. People are at least more apt to talk about it, I think, ever since September 11th. You know, just the role that being obviously religious plays in one's life and in one's perceived chances for success and survival.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, going back to politics a little bit in our conversation about Obama and Romney, it seems to me if religion is a common area for passing, that politics has got to be maybe the all-time standard bearer here, because it strikes me that the art of passing, the art of politics are like two brothers in the same family, right?
They really can. And I think where one becomes distinguished from the other is really in terms of what the goal is. So for some people, you know, passing is actually to promote political change for the group. So very quickly, there's a very famous story of a passer who was multiracial but identified as African-American named Walter White, ironically enough, who went undercover during the era when lynching was really rampant in the South. And was a witness to many lynching and began to report it, and as a result was able to testify and get the first anti-lynching laws passed in the United States, right? So so that's, you know, passing used for good, right? But like anything else, it does have its more menacing outcomes as well.
I was going to say, what do you make of the ethics of politicians who are constantly passing themselves off as one thing or another, because that's what politicians do, right?
Sadly, yeah, it is what politicians do. And I think that's when we as constituents have to really put that mirror up to ourselves, as, you know, Michael Jackson would say in one of my favorite of his songs, and really say, okay, who are we and what is it that we are demanding? And why is it that people cannot present themselves as they are in order to be our leaders, or in the case of our last caller, in order to feel comfortable in her daily life?
And politicians, I guess, by the nature of the beast, in theory, they can't do that, though, can they? They try to be, by the nature of the beast, they try to be all things to all people. That's what they're about.
Well, in some respects, yes. I mean, I certainly can't disagree with that. But in other respects, and perhaps this is just my more John Lennon side coming out too, right? But but I do think that there is room for some humanity, some room for some error, you know, back again to our previous segment on today's show. And so, you know, I think it cuts both ways, I guess, is what I'm really trying to say.
Let's go to Debbie from Overland Park. Debbie, you're on with Professor Marcia Dawkins. She's the author of Clearly Invisible, Racial Passing and the Color of Cultural Identity. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say pretty much what you've just been talking about, is that I think in politics especially, it's just the nature of the beast. You know, I think back to John F. Kennedy when he was elected. He was one of the top 1%, but he tried to, you know, be something other than that, appeal to more people than that.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that that's really being a passer, which to me kind of has a negative connotation. I think it's a matter of authenticity and transparency. And also just another side comment is young people, when they're becoming who they are, go through all kinds of stages of passing, I guess, if you would call it. And I don't think it's a negative thing at all. It's just becoming who you are and being somebody different at different stages in life. And, of course, politicians, that's the name of the game.
What about, though, Debbie, someone like JFK? You know, your point is very well taken, but he also sort of portrayed himself as healthy and vigorous. You know, he gave his inaugural address in Washington in 1961 with no top hat, no coat, even though it was freezing outside, when, in fact, we've come to find out, John F. Kennedy was a very sick man who was propped up by all kinds of drugs to sort of keep him moving and fit, and that's raised a lot of questions since then.
Exactly. I think that's very true, and I just think that, you know, for whatever reason, maybe we forced our politicians into having to present a certain image and having to appeal to a wider variety of people to get elected to do what they think is right for the country. So, you know, that's true of FDR, that's true of JFK, that's true of, I would say, all of our presidents.
Yeah, I would too. And actually, and Debbie, thank you for your call. I was thinking, Marcia, about when you think of the world of politics, who are some of the greatest passers of all time, or would you put them all in the same category?
Wow, that's a great question. I was thinking about JFK as you were talking, because I too recently found out about this health aspect.
Yeah.
So I would say he's right up there. Oh gosh, who else? In my more radical moments, I would say many of our founding fathers, right, who wrote these documents about how democratic and awesome our nation is, while at the same time not giving women any rights and enslaving large populations, right?
Great point.
So I'm hard pressed to make that top 10 list, but I do think, to you and to your caller's last point, you know, it is the nature of the beast. And that is extremely unfortunate for us, isn't it?
How did you become so interested in this particular topic, Marcia? What drew you in?
Well, aside from my, you know, obvious revelation today about my age passing, what really drew me in was, being a kid in New York City and being asked often just, you know, out at the grocery store with parents, or just walking around, sitting in Washington Square Park studying at NYU, was just, you know, what are you? And I'm like, I'm a student studying. I have a sociology exam in an hour, But really, people were really concerned. And as I moved to different places, the way people would ask the question became different. What does that mean? So in New York City, that question would be asked to me a lot in English and Spanish. In Los Angeles, that question was asked to me a lot in Arabic, which until recently I didn't know anything about.
And why is that? Why were you asked that by folks who were of Arab descent?
Because I guess they thought I was one of them. And when I couldn't answer in Arabic, you know, some people were like, oh, I you look just like my cousin Pam. Right. On the other hand, you know, others were like, no, it's really OK. You can talk to me. It's fine. And so I began to think about, you know, where that question comes from, why people were assuming I was passing. Was I passing, whether it was unconscious or not, and why this seems to keep cropping up around me. So as much as I'm interested in it, I would say passing also kind of found me and became interested in me.
Just quickly, Marcia, we just have a few seconds left. Has there been much scholarship done in this area, or are you sort of breaking some new ground here?
Well, both yes to both of those questions. Yes, there's a great amount of scholarship done, particularly when we look in fields like legal studies, where people actually had trials for racial determination, as well as cultural studies and this kind of thing. And where I'm breaking new ground is also in rhetorical studies, actually looking at the language of passing.
Well, Dr. Marcia Dawkins is the author of Clearly Invisible, Racial Passing and the Color of Cultural Identity. Marcia, I really enjoyed having you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You bet. All the best to you.
Thanks.
You can learn more about Marcia and get more information about our program at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date.